You're listening to Battle Rattle Radio here, a small part of TACCOM Media, and this is Triple D on the mic, and with me, of course, is the man behind the plan with One Shepherd, amongst many other media sources as well. But Chris Larson, your description gets... I could take 10 minutes giving you a lead in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good thing, though. I mean, TACCOM Media is probably the most... In fact, it is. It's the most comprehensive, but yeah, if we're going to toot our own horn here, TACCOM Media, of course, is OD Journal. It's One Shepherd. It's our publications.
It's Battle Rattle Radio as well.
It's Battle Rattle Radio. Yeah, I mean, no, it's quite...
You got a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Isn't that what they say about business models, is to be diversified?
Sure, sure. Well, yeah. Without a doubt. And as a model, speaking of having a lot of irons in the fire, you just had a very big event that you just got finished.
Huge event. Our 30-year anniversary. So this was the our spring FTX, which... for the last roughly 5 years, this is a joint FEX-FTX with the Marine Platoon from the University of Missouri's Naval ROTC program out there. So that was, they were the Blue Four, of course, but One Shepherd provided the Op Four, and it was just wonderful that our FTX, of course, culminates each academic semester. So that's what just happened for us, wrapped up our spring semester. But the cool thing about this was not only that it was a big event, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with 60 people in participation. That's 51 students participating with 9 staff, cadre, and supporting staff. So 60 people out there for 3 days. It was a blast. The weather was cold and wet. I mean, just raining and got cold. You know, what are you going to do? In April, it can do that. Thank God it didn't snow on us. But no, I'm telling you, I think honestly, Triple D, that the more difficult the weather environments are, and you know, you've been there, the more at the end of it you're able to say, man, we did something. So there was a lot of satisfaction out of this. But the great thing is we had alumni from the 1980s, the 1990s, the 2000s. We had a couple or few from each one of those sections out there with this group. So it was fantastic to see their faces again. And like I said, it was great. It's been 30 years this month. May 1981, of course, is when One Shepherd started all those years ago. And we're still going strong. In fact, stronger than ever. So this was some real vindication and just a really neat reunion. Opportunity too. So yeah. That was of course, this is May. That was just in April. Our 30-year FTX anniversary.
Oh, you know, when you talk about this, of course, we've got a lot we want to talk about on this particular airing of Battle Rattle Radio. But when you're talking about the event specific wise, I mean, you're mentioning people that were participants in the 80s, 90s. I'm assuming that at least for one person, this was their first opportunity to work with the platform of Miles then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. All those guys. Well, there's... Let me see. I'm not sure about the guys in 2000s because, as you know, in 2007, we had Miles delivered. So a couple of those two guys might have worked with it. I can't remember. No, one had and one hadn't, now that I think about it. And then we had several guys from the 90s, and one of our old alumni from the 1980s came in. And so... And we had a couple others from the 1980s, myself included, you know, Patrick Larson and stuff like that. But, oh, yeah. A lot of these guys had never used this stuff before. They got to do it. They loved it. You know, I mean, it's great because, and this is no joke, I it's probably not fair for me to mention names, but two of them have now said, I'm going to send my son or nephew or something. I loved this when I was in high school and college. I'm going to send my kid out there. So, yeah, I mean, that feels great.
Another generation, literally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not using slang when we talk about something like that. Well, that's really neat. I think it was a real, I'm sure it was a great time for everybody, you know, going that far back, that many decades back, to get back together, just a who's who. I'm sure. I'm quite certain they were surprised at the size of it and the depth of it.
Absolutely. And you know what was really cool in the lead up to it, and certainly there, a lot of the younger generation right now, the students who were in high school or college, they commented, I want to meet some of these people, you know. It's just really neat because they're curious. I have questions about what it was like back then, you know. So, yeah, real neat all the way around. Just a neat event.
I've no doubt. We could spend a lot of time probably going over the specifics of that event. I know just from having been through the few of the 48-hour tactics that I've been through that we had enough material. What did we say after the first show? We had enough material to do the next 10 shows pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah.
So we could spend all the. But you did mention one of the specifics of this reunion event that you know it was in conjunction with the Marine Naval Detachment. Now, but you said it was the Naval ROTC in University of Missouri Columbia, right?
Right.
Yeah, certainly worked with a number of those guys. I imagine there's probably some faces I remember down there. But you mentioned the specifics that Juan Shepherd was providing the opposing force.
Absolutely, yeah. The Marines each spring come out, and they, of course, are the Blue Four, which for us, Blue Four means American forces, you know, U.S. forces, the Blue Team, the good guys. And then the Op Four, which, of course, is the what we want to talk about this. That's, you know, that's the topic of this show is opposing forces. The Op Four was Juan Shepherd. We provide the resistance then for the Blue Four because, and this is a serious note, because each time the Marines come out there, and this is, don't misunderstand it, let me be very, I got to split hairs carefully here. The Marines are doing their own FTX, but it is a joint FTX with us. What the Marines are doing very much, now they get into our scenario and everything else, and we support them with material support, but they have their cadre there and everything else. What they're doing is they're prepping, I forget which year it is, I think it's their third year midshipman for Marine OCS this summer. So their leaders are actually prepping for OCS.
Well, I'm sure it's a great environment. In my experience with the FTX, the Juan Shepherd puts, conjunction or not, again, it was, I believe, a conjoined effort with, again, the Marine. This was, what, 3 years ago, I think
right.
it was. I
went to right, sure.
Mm-hmm. Great environment for all of that. What a great prep to go to lead into an officer candidate school.
Right. It's small unit patrolling focus. Of course, it's leadership focus. It's decision-making focus. So, no, you're right. It's exactly what they need. They love it. We've got a good, strong relationship with them. And, of course, we're just really happy to have them out there. I mean, it's one thing when you're training to fight yourself, and that is to split your team into two teams so that you aggress against yourself. But, and you can achieve a certain level of learning there. But ultimately, you need an opponent. Not just one of your own team. You need somebody outside your team. This does two things. First off, it allows your entire team to work as with team integrity. Now, instead of part of a team, I've got my whole team able to go to the field and do what they're supposed to do. But equally as important, it gives you an outside force, opposition, to be resistance. You know, call it negative or positive resistance, doesn't matter. It's resistance so that you can learn to do what you need to do.
So that in essence is the basic definition of an opposing force then.
Yeah, an op four, the opposing force. And that's why they're so critical. The Marines said that. This FTX. One of their comments, one of their cadre comments said, gosh, this is really good for us each year because we get to function as an entire Marine platoon rather than split up. And we don't know our opponent. You know, there's that unknown element. Where are they going to spring up? How many are they going to be? What is their tactic? You know, that unknown puts such a motivating factor into the entire training.
I see. Well, now, it seems like the opposing force, or the OP4, look, wouldn't get used to using the acronym there. The OP4 is there to provide resistance, like you said, from a basic definition, but seems to me like there might be a wide variety or a variety of reasons why they need to be providing that resistance.
No, there are. And I think what we're getting to is what we would define as specific OP4 versus dedicated OP4. And admittedly, I'm going to go ahead and say right up front, there can be hybrids. In fact, there often are. But a specific OP4 versus a dedicated OP4. And are you familiar with those two?
Somewhat in regards, but I mean, just to go ahead and reestablish the polarity of the two would help quite a bit.
No, you're right. And for the listening audience, it's probably a good thing. Because I think most people know what an OP4 is, but they don't understand the two different focuses. And I can't say this emphatically enough. Just because you have two different focuses doesn't mean that both attributes are absent. A credible OP4 is going to have both attributes, but generally has one focus or another. And here's what I mean. That's kind of vague, but I'll break it down. A dedicated op four. Think of this in terms of customers. If you're running a MILSIM event, for example, or if you're an Army training institution, you have a brigade or a client that comes to you, a customer that comes to you. If you have a dedicated, and they're going to be the blue four, if you have a dedicated op four, that means essentially the op four is part of your staff. The op four isn't also customers. They're part of your staff. They're dedicated to that institution, to that training company. And they're not customers. So because they're not customers, they're not here to play, quote unquote, or even necessarily to learn, quote unquote. Though they'll do both. They will get into what's colloquially called wargaming. That's play. And they will ultimately learn. They'll learn a lot more than they think they will. You're dedicated op four. But the dedicated op four can quite literally be taken from our training staff. Quite literally. They're dedicated. What that means is their focus is to be a training tool. Okay? To be a training tool. Not necessarily to die in place. In fact, that's almost never the case. But they are a training tool. Got it? All right. And the magic of that, Triple D, the magic of that is they have to know when to apply enough pressure. This is a real hat tip and a shout out to Mike Simpson's group there in Phoenix, Arizona, called Marauders Tactical. And they are a airsoft MILSIM-based organization that does training. And what Marauders Tactical does beautifully is he has a dedicated op four in his staff. And he trains the staff to be learning tools. And he tells them, to my knowledge, he never tells them die. What he says is, push back enough resistance on our client so that it forces our client to make a decision and then play to our client's level. And he actually has code words that he says over the radio when he might say, you know, the code word is level one. Basically, these guys don't understand tactics and decision making at all. They understand how to be an individual soldier. So he's going to have them kind of break up and do soldier on soldier kind of fight. Okay. And he says level one. And they all go, okay, I know what that means. And they offer just enough resistance. That doesn't mean they won't defeat the customer, but the customer needs to learn because they're doing something foolish. They will defeat them. But they're not going to just kick puppies, you know what I'm saying? Walk through like kicking newborn puppies. No, they're not going to do that. They're not going to humiliate people. They didn't come here to chest thump. They're dedicated professional op four. All right? Now, as the team, as the other OCs, Mike himself and his OCs, as they walk there with the client and they start saying, hey guys, training on the fly, do this, try this, do this, try this. As they start to get better and he starts to see them pull it together over a couple hours, a day, or even a few days, he'll get on that radio and tell his op four, level two. You give enough, and then finally, level three. Maybe he's got a really squared away customer that's already a SWAT team or something that's coming in to do training with him. And he can see right away, these guys are good. So he'll say to his op four, hey guys, level three. And he teaches them each level. And like I said, they're never obligated to die. That's not the thing. If the client achieves their mission, they know they've achieved their mission. Now that's kind of cool. That kind of understanding that the dedicated op four seeks to offer enough resistance that the blue four can legitimately learn individual skill craft, team battle drill, and small unit tactics. They understand that, and they're going to help do that. Does that, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, in, maybe in layman's terms, I think your op four is a dedicated op four. Their focus is primarily to provide an environment for that that's conducive to good training.
Yeah.
So if you come in and you take advantage of the fact that you have a much larger experience base and skill sets, and you come in and you virtually, in a MILSIM situation, eradicate the enemy based on their weaknesses, which would be classic Sun Tzu. Yeah, you won, but what environment did you create that was conducive to learning and training, to developing
Absolutely. And Triple D is, and Triple D doesn't, you know, talk about this a lot. He actually had, for years and years and years, did sports radio. And, of course, now he works with YMCA. He's a coach for some actually pretty successful basketball teams, plural. What's the age group you're working with now?
Well, they're 6th and 7th grade, 12 and 13 years old.
Okay, excellent. See, and so he works with them on an ongoing basis. Now, what I happen to know is that Triple D and a couple of his other coaches, his assistant coaches, often play the opposing force for your students.
Sure, inside of a practice environment, the arena, it's a very similar arena to what you're talking about, you know, specific to each event. Well, obviously, we're basketball, X's and O's. But yes, in the practice environment, and we've talked about it, you know, I mentioned before, you know, it's a numbers game. It's 5-on-5, and we have 8 kids. So the assistant coach and I provide the 4th and the 5th person, which are,
sure.
And you know, they don't know this. The other 3 that are on the squad with us that are going, you know, we're scrimmaging 5-on-5. The other 3 probably aren't. They're not in on the know. They're not. But as assistant coaches, we're much older, much taller. You know, we are the 4th and 5th member of what it basically is, the op 4. For, you know, it's a strong comparison to it.
And what's the goal of you getting out there, other than obviously to make the teams even, but other than that, what's your goal when you two step out there and actually start playing against whatever, your lead team?
Well, I think, you know, staying in theme about what you're talking about, what you're referring to, first of all, is that we don't take advantage of our sheer height advantage and physical attributes. Yeah,
we're talking experience.
And experience, yeah. Sure.
You're not out there kicking puppies.
Exactly.
And chest thumping and ha ha ha, look, we beat these kids. Right. Boy, didn't I teach them something.
Yes, and they learned a lot. Wasn't that grand? What we
learned that Coach Triple D
is stronger and bigger than me.
And not a nice guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, as an op 4 too, when we have a unique environment, maybe this, and this would be interesting to see if you could draw this a corollary between what you do, you're talking about the op 4 and what they're able to provide, because they're still operating as the enemy. It's a simulation invite. I'm referring to the op 4.
Sure.
We have, inside the practice, and we use, for one, let me just take a little sidestep, a little shout out to you guys. I use a lot of One Shepherd Doctrine.
Oh, good.
Use a
really?
Lot of, you know,
cool.
Oh, yeah. Commander's intent is very prevalent. We have an after action review.
Oh, nice.
Those
are the two most critical,
yeah,
right there.
It's,
yeah,
funny, and my assistant coach doesn't even realize it's a military acronym, because I check one site because I hear him going, hey, I'll be right down in a few minutes to have that AAR. You know, I'm like, well, if we only knew. But getting back to the practice situation, this will relate to what you're talking about, because we are an op 4, or we're 40% of the op 4.
Right.
But we have a unique environment being able to actually shout out to the quote-unquote enemy, the blue 4, and say, okay, you know, we can squash bad habits right there verbally, which may be an environment that's a little bit hard to,
sure,
in a Milsim event, you're not going to go up and say, hey, that's bad spacing on that patrol.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to do that. You're not going, hey, you know, why are you using your chem lights over there and exposing yourself? You're not going to do that. You know?
Right.
You know, we have the added, but it's still an op 4 mentality.
Right, you just got immediate feedback,
yeah,
rather than...
If you could do that and not, you know, yeah, sabotage the simulation, you would. You'd go, hey, my God, what are you doing over there?
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
What was that assault all about? What was the spacing, you know? So we have that, too, but...
You're humiliating me in front of the mosquitoes.
That's right. So we have that added, but it's still, again, a very much of an op-4 mentality. We're obviously not going to block every one of their shots, you know, or use our speed to outrun them. You know, we're going to let them grow within the system and learn.
Sure. Now, see, that's the whole point. That is what a dedicated op 4 is all about. It comes from the institution itself. It comes from the staff itself. And it's meant, in military terms, I'm allowing, as a dedicated op 4 member, I'm allowing the blue 4 to learn how to do that tactic. Whatever that tactic is. Let's say it's a deliberate attack. I'm providing resistance so they learn with some sense of... resolution, they learn, okay, I have to do this attack. Let me see how I do this attack. Now, here's something that's kind of and it leads right into it. The fact is, it doesn't matter which opposing force I am. Let me say that again. It doesn't matter if I'm a North Korean army or a Venezuelan army or a Pashto insurgent guerrilla force. No, I don't need that kind of resolution. I need to offer positive positive or negative, I need to offer resistance so the Blue Four learns to do that tactic. That's a dedicated Op Four. Now, hold on. You go, wait. I've seen Op Fours that very much look like Venezuelan army or Chinese, communist army or insurgents or what? Yes, those exist. And that's called a specific Op Four. Okay? Here, this military force, whether it's MIL-SIM or military or law enforcement or whoever they are, professional security, they are, because all of those apply, what they're doing is now that specific Op 4 is even, I would say a dedicated Op 4 is never a die-in place, but it's offered just enough resistance. Specific Op 4s don't offer just enough resistance. There is an element, I don't want to push this too far or overemphasize it, but there is an element that at some point you turn to your specific Op 4 and you say, go kick puppies, go do your best. But high resolution, you have to behave exactly as the entity you're representing. If I say you're a red team army, a comm block armored division, then you must behave as a comm block armored division. You must do what they do. You can do it to the best of your ability and kick the Blue Four's, backsides, but you must behave within your doctrine. On the other hand, if you're an insurgent, a guerrilla force, a terrorist cell, then you must behave exactly as they behave. Now, you're still allowed to go kick off on, Blue Four's behind, but you have to behave as that insurgent. What this does is this allows then the Blue Four to aggress and defeat against a credible high-resolution opposing force, one that they anticipate meeting downrange in real life or at the next game or whatever the case is. You see what I'm saying? So now let's go back to your basketball team, Triple D. If you know that you've got a major team to beat, the leading team in your league, and you've got a couple weeks to spin up your team to face them, now you and your assistant coaches might study that team, really learn how they've been successful, and even maybe play up some of their weaknesses so that you could take that game to your team and start playing like your opponent does. Now it's a whole new focus. It's not about, well, I want to get them to dribble. I want them to get to passing. I want them to understand zone defense. Now it's not about that. Now, with a specific opposing force, you want your team to learn how to defeat that particular team, that particular opponent. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's stepping out of the lines of the generic and saying the specific. Right. It's a snapshot. It's a moment in time. This is what I want you to be able to tactically operate well against. And it may be next week. It may be 5 years from now in the future. But given the same battlefield again, you'll be able to, a good analogy is our practice squads in the NFL do that. There's a practice squad. A lot of players that don't make an NFL team will actually be signed to a practice squad. They make X amount of dollars a week, thousands of dollars a week, and they line up and they practice all week with the roster.
Do they mimic specifically mimic other teams?
I would suspect so. I mean, I could expect that it matters, and there's all kinds of things too. Even the environment, like if they're playing in a dome where they know they'll practice inside the facility and they'll turn radios on really loud and speakers to incredibly high decibel levels while they're practicing, for an example. So
yes,
environment based.
That's getting specific.
That's an Op 4.
Right, and that is because now you're creating a high resolution environment. You're right. It's not just the Op 4 wearing the right uniform and using the right tactics. It's also a credible environment. Does this environment have the same variables as the environment we'll actually be operating in? So you're saying, well, yeah, it's an inside dome court with lots of noise because that's, yeah, you're getting it. That's those specific obstacles and specific issues and concerns and variables that you have to overcome. That's what a specific Op 4 provides.
They create that environment.
Right.
And if they have to upgrade the level of resistance because the environment is being compromised, then that because the other because the blue floor is developing and adapting and begin, then yes. you raise the bars of resistance and therefore you sustain the learning environment.
You got it. Now, we just said there's specific Op 4 and there's dedicated Op 4. And by the way, often, at least within one shepherd, for example, and I've noticed this is often the case, specific Op 4, most commonly, are customers too. Now, that's the irony, is that dedicated Op 4 almost universally come from within the staff. But if you have an institution, including military institutions, law enforcement institutions, government institutions such as the security of the Department of State or Department of Energy, all these sort of things. Anyway, so there's all these agencies that go to these different training, and what commonly happens is, and certainly at One Shepherd simulations, is that not only is the Blue 4 a client, but the Op 4 is a client.
And you say it's more common when they're specific.
Yeah, that's when they're specific.
What's the rationale? I mean, I'm curious what the rationale is, because they took the time to be trained to become that way?
Exactly. They want to learn, or they already have learned, and now this is their test as well. So does the Op 4, I guess, with a high resolution, can they appropriately represent that? And so they'll come and be clients to the scenario, to the training scenario, to the simulation scenario. So that's a little different. Now, that's often the case. That's not always the case. And in fact, you can see blended. That is, you can see specific Op 4 that are, that come within the staff. You can see dedicated Op 4 that, in some rare cases, that don't come from within staff but are customers. So there's different variations. But but it's not uncommon to see blends. Okay, so you have both a dedicated Op 4 that is specific. Let me give you a very, very clear-cut case. And it starts, and it's ironic because it started almost to the month the same time One Shepherd did. They are also 30 years old. And that is the United States Army's TRADOC opposing force, Krasnovia, the Krasnovian Motorized Rifle Regiment. It's not even a real country. It's fictional. It's notional. But they started in 1981 at the National Training Center in Fort Irwin, California. They further extended then, in the late 80s, to the Jungle Readiness Training Center in Fort Polk, still Krasnovia, but a different learning environment, and have further now, of course, gone to the Joint Maneuver Readiness Center in Hohenfels, Germany. Okay? So, and still Krasnovia. There is one, these are all the JMRC, JRTC, NTC. These are all called CTCs, or Combat Training Centers. Now, there's one more right here, of course, right here in Fort Leavenworth, and that's the BCTP, the Battle Command Training Program. It also has a dedicated Op 4 and everything else, but the BCTP is a virtual fight that's really taught at, while the other ones certainly have operational warfare, they have battle staffs at the battalion and brigade level. The BCTP is entirely operational warfighting.
It's all command level.
Yeah, it's all virtual. The people moving around aren't really there. It's just on the computer. But it's the fourth CTC. And in these cases, in all four of those, the theory is anyway that the Op 4 is not only dedicated, coming from within the institution itself, but is also specific. The Krasnovian forces, depending on the soup du jour, that is, depending on what the threat is that decade, 1980s, 1990s, 2000s, the threat looked very different. And each time they would go to the Krasnovian forces and say, okay, now you are this specific force. Now you are that specific force. So they were both dedicated and specific.
I'm assuming there was probably an extensive amount of training they immediately launched for them to make the identity change.
Well, now you just kicked it right. Now, okay, first off, oh, wow, gosh, I got to back up here. I'm going to be critical. You've just opened a can of worms, and I don't know if you intentionally did that or not.
Well.
But here's the thing.
wouldn't put it past me, but...
Well, credit where credit's due. I think they, within reason, they do a very good job, within reason. What you just said is the problem. I've talked to each one of these organizations. I've talked to people who worked there, people who, the soldiers who rotated there, people who worked in the Op Force, in the Op 4. And furthermore, with the exception of JRTC, I've actually been multiple times to JMRC and NTC. And so I've worked closely with them, even in with the scenario writing. And by the way, I even worked with JRTC from Fort Polk scenario writers, but I wasn't down at JRTC. I was up at Fort Drum at the time. The point is here that they really effectively train at an operational level. The force is not just dedicated. The Op 4 is not just dedicated. It is very specific. The problem is, as that translates down, as that trickles down to the tactical level, the Op 4 squad, platoon, company, no. They dress them in an appropriate looking uniform or, you know, garb, but I was mortified to find out that these guys are Blue 4. I was like, wait a minute. Okay, so you're carrying an AK-47 and you've got the shemagh over your head and you're dressed in some kind of long, you know, man dress. But you're formed as a rifle squad from the U.S. Army. Well, yeah, we are a squad. Well, wait a minute. What tactics are you using then? Well, we're using the tactics we're taught at Fort Benning, the School of the Infantry. Well, hold on. So you're task organized like Blue 4. Your tactics and doctrine are Blue 4. How about your logistics? What do you mean logistics? Well, how are you being fed? And I'm joking. The guys pull out MREs. Guys, the Taliban doesn't have MREs for a very, very specific reason. It separates them from the civilian population that they want to control. Their logistics come from that population. I'm not joking. Crickets. These guys are blink, blink, blink. What does he say? I don't know. Speaking other language. And I'm not making fun of them. These guys are bright guys. They're dedicated guys. They're experienced. So I don't mean to make fun of these people. I mean, they literally have experience downrange fighting that enemy for real. So I'm not making fun of them, nor am I making fun of their capabilities as infantry. What I'm saying is they were not taught at any resolution, any appreciable resolution, how to be an opposing force. Now, I'm not the only one saying this. There have quite literally for the last couple of years, there have been 3-star generals running the speech circuit saying, we recognize this as the gap. The BCTP has this down pat. All the other CTCs has this down pat at the operational level, but we don't know enough about our opposing forces, about our threat, our enemy, to train our own guys how to be credible enemies, how to behave as a credible enemy. So what happens is you can identify at these training centers, you can identify the bad guys because they wear the proper equipment and gear and uniforms. But you don't get a chance to fight against the enemy. You fight against Blue 4. And so this is part of the problem. You're starting to see now where the blending of two potentially is incredibly powerful and certainly has been in certain instances. But for the most part, you're seeing what I call the degradation or the perversion of it. What instead happens is, with an Op 4, and this is the most common mistakes, is that the Op 4 goes, yay, we get to be Op 4. Let's go kick some butt. And they come out there to defeat the Blue 4, chest thump and say, yes, we did it. Not only did the Blue 4 not get to learn the specific tactics that they were supposed to learn, but because the Op 4 did not actually accurately and at a high resolution represent what the real enemy does, the Blue 4 didn't even get to recognize that. They didn't even get to say, oh, holy cow, I didn't realize the Op 4 operated like that. Oh my gosh, we better mitigate that strength. Oh wow, I didn't realize the enemy was limited in their logistics this way. Why, we better compromise that weakness. They don't get to do that. And so this is an enormous shortcoming within the CTCs right now. And, of course, if it's an enormous shortcoming in CTCs for professional warriors, then you can imagine it's an enormous shortcoming in most simulation out there, be it virtual, be it live, be it constructive, be it gaming. Doesn't matter. It's a weakness.
I see. And it's about the environment. Again, though, it's about keeping the environment conducive for the possible, the maximizing your training opportunity. So your opposing force is they're pivotal. If you're trying to maintain a training simulation, particularly a specific one, they're pivotal. You've got to have that. So they have to either be exposed to the training they have to be exposed to the tactics of the forces they're trying to emulate, and they need to be able to put those tactics in operation on the battlefield.
I like the word pivotal. I'm going to go farther. I'm going to say critical.
Critical
to success. Look, you've got four CTCs, three of them which physical, large physical facilities, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of square miles, building structures, multiple fake towns built. You're moving whole entire brigades there, often from over the ocean. I mean, I forget how many tens of millions of dollars, and I mean that, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 million dollars just to move a 3, 4, 5,000 man brigade, across an ocean or across a country. Forget the actual CTC itself. Just to move them and back cost, like I said, tens of millions of dollars. Plus, the institution has all these soldiers and contractors and everybody else standing it up. Plus, the physical, the expense of the physical place to upkeep. This is just mind-numbing amounts of money. Why would we be spending that if it wasn't seen as absolutely critical that we have a dedicated, specific Op 4? Triple D, if we didn't need that, these units could sit back at their home unit at Fort Bragg, Fort Campbell, Fort Carson, Fort Hood. They could sit back there and say, meh, we'll just aggress against ourselves. Blue 4 on Blue 4. It's absolutely critical, and the money behind it, follow the money, right? And the money behind this illustrates quite acutely how critical this is to success on the battle space. Now, if that's true for the military, you say, well, we're a milsim game. We're not going to go downrange and do this. Yes, but how good of a milsim game do you want to be? To what resolution do you want to represent the Blue 4 and the Op 4? And you take something like, of course, we've had them on here in our shows many different times, and we've talked about East Wind. Oh my gosh. You got a 9-day airsoft event that looks like Reforger from 1985 to 1995. And that's what they do. They said, that's our circa. That's what we reenact. Reenact is more correct. It is a airsoft milsim, airsoft-based milsim, but it looks a heck of a lot more like a reenactment. You've got Soviet armor vehicles. You've got Eastern Bloc scout vehicles. You've got NATO armored vehicles and U.S., Army vehicles. And that's just a start. I mean, oh my gosh, the uniforms, the equipment is so incredibly accurate, and they study the doctrine. Of the appropriate doctrine. Warsaw Pact forces study Warsaw Pact command structure, task organization, equipment training, tactical training. They stick to their doctrine.
So their Op 4 has integrity.
Incredible integrity. Incredible integrity. And if you'll pardon me, sorry, Brett Conklin and Alan Swayze out there, but if you'll pardon me for saying so, if a podunk operation like East Wind can put this on, then you have to ask, whoa, these guys are on a shoestring budget. Why can't we achieve that level of immersion?
At our CTCs.
At our CTCs, yeah.
Which has all the funding. It's funny from an outside standpoint, from an outside coming looking in, outside looking in, coming in to evaluate a training opportunity, exercise or environment, a 1 day, a 2 hour, whatever it is we're talking about, because I think this occurs at any level. As long as your Blue 4 has been trained to the best of your ability to operate a certain set of tactics, maybe one tactic, to execute a certain number of tactics on any one training event. Once that has been accomplished, a huge part of that learning process falls on the shoulders of that op four.
Yeah.
They are, in essence, the teachers.
Yeah.
In many ways. I mean, you know, there's gray area, but through their amount of resistance they apply and also the manner and timing in which they choose to apply that resistance, as long as they don't overpower the training and the skill sets of your blue four, your op four is, you're right, critical, crucial, responsible. If there's a problem, you could almost just say, there's the culprit. I've done this over here with my blue four. Why wasn't there good training? That's my first troubleshoot. Well, what was my op four doing?
No, you're nailing it. You're nailing it. And what you're talking about actually is now delving into educational psychology, okay? And it's probably well above your head and my head combined. But nonetheless, it's pretty smart stuff. So what you've got is, let me show you an example of this. What you're saying is that through training, we can learn enough. As long as the training is high resolution, we can learn enough from that training that we can actually take that and use it in real life. So, you know, the Klein and Associates, Dr. Jeff Klein, anyway, they said, look, this is how humans learn in their head. They learn through a Rolodex of experiences. And he, of course, championed the recognition prime decisions or decision making as a model. But the point is, yes, he's saying we must learn through our experiences. And what high resolution training then does, you're right, they learn the basics, they learn to work together as a team. Now they need to fight specific enemies so that they learn, that's what we do in this situation. And they can recognize that up front. That's what even firefighters do this. Even public works like networked power grids and stuff, they must fight specific opponents, specific variables in order to learn to be successful. And so, sure, a credible op four is absolutely necessary for that.
Why do I feel like the blue four could have gotten a better training environment where they were, you know, they felt empowered to be able to take whatever tactics they just learned and execute them? Well, if that doesn't happen, you see what I'm saying? If it's been compromised, where's the first place you look? Your op four. I mean, it's not ultimately always going to fall on them, but you're going to say, if it was compromised, well, what was my op four doing? Were they too aggressive? Were they not aggressive enough? Did they apply enough pressure and resistance, or did they apply too much resistance and it was a lesson opportunity lost?
Not only that, but I absolutely agree with that. But not only that. If the op four doesn't get it right, let's stop taking the op four from a military. Let's go back to a Klein and Associates who made their big discovery and breakthroughs with fire department. If you don't set the environment up, if you don't set the bad guy, the flames, and do the right things, then the firefighters aren't learning what they're going to actually face in a real fire, in a real building, or in a real home, or in a real forest. If you don't accurately, with a high resolution, represent that, then what good is their training? You're spending money and spinning your wheels, and it's all for naught, because they're going to have to go get that very, very dangerous experience. If they're lucky enough to live through it, they're going to have to get that in the real world. If we can instead put that into live, virtual, and constructive learning environments, then through that resistance, therefore op four, then yes, they can learn those experiences to a great resolution, develop their own Rolodex, and say, okay, now I'm ready to go into the real world and face whatever problem is, be it forest fires, be it natural catastrophes against network power grids, okay, civil infrastructure, be it law enforcement and security forces and military and NASA going out to Mars, whatever it is. The notion, we may not call it op four everywhere, but the notion of the opposing force is there in so much of what we do in terms of training and decision making, and you know it because you see it even in your basketball team.
Sure, it's basic problem solving. Yeah. And when you have that, what happens is, you know, your op four actually in essence can become a concept rather than an organic team.
Sure.
You know, and what do we do with our children? What do we do? Look at parenthood. You put your children in situations where they have an opportunity to fail, but you don't. But obviously, you don't put them in an environment where they're going to fail and it's life threatening or life. You know.
Wow, you just hit a huge, huge thing. Triple D, that is critically important. One of the things that I say about One Shepherd training.
Wow, I got to bring it back to One Shepherd. Boy, this is a shameless plug.
Shh. Anyway, one of the things I say about One Shepherd training is that we create a safe place to fail. And I don't think a lot of people understand that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a place where you can come and get it wrong, but there's no permanent repercussions. And you can learn then to get it right. In fact, failure is almost encouraged. It's almost desirable because we can turn around and learn from that. That's a safe place to fail. And the opt for is critical to that.
No, well, you know, it allows them to be, if the opt for is doing the job right, the blue for can make aggressive mistakes.
Yes.
You know, and it's all because of that environment. Like you said, if you fail here and you fall on your face, so be it. No, you know, no harm, no foul.
Right.
It's interesting.
It's what did you learn, right?
Sure. It's an environment-based thing. And, well, a good concept. So, you know, let's recap a little bit because we're getting close to the end here. But, you're talking about there's a dedicated opt for. Generally, a lot of times it comes from training staff. A lot of times it's the extension of the staff from in a Milsim training environment.
Right.
Designed to provide enough resistance to create the most optimal learning environment.
That's right.
Okay. Your dedicated or specific opt for is quite often can be dedicated, but they're specific to a tactic of a specific military unit.
A threat,
insurgents, possibly, like I said, armor. It could be a blitzkrieg. Let's go back to World War II. It could be something emulating that.
It could even, as you were saying, it can be environmental. It can be the Op 4 is really going to somehow, some way, because if we're doing virtual, the Op 4 is going to be a tsunami that comes after an earthquake that hits a nuclear power plant.
But it can be an outside. It doesn't have to be an organic thing. It can be an event. It can be a condition.
Right. You know, and that's not a mistake, by the way. The Japanese government came out and said, look, we have a very highly trained emergency management, very similar to your FEMA and all of this, civil infrastructure and everything else. They are trained on earthquakes. They are trained on tsunamis. They are trained on problems and meltdowns at a nuclear reactor. They are not trained on all three.
Mm-hmm. Again, that would be an environment. That would be a brand new op for.
There you go.
Something never seen. So it's all about creating these environments for the future possibilities of.
There you go.
Excellent. Now, I think it's important to have that understanding. Now, real quick, we're getting ready to cap this out. You know, cap this off here. But when you talk about the more of the client op for. Where do they draw a line? Clearly, they obviously have probably been an op for. They're experienced enough to know what an op for is supposed to do to where they're going to continue to provide the right amount of resistance for learning. But where do you draw the line and say, okay, but yet I still want you to accomplish your objectives?
You know, with a specific, this is why client op fors can be specific, but they don't make a very good dedicated op for. A client op for doesn't. Because a dedicated op for, I have to be able to say, whoa, guys, pull back, throttle back, throttle back, throttle back. A client op for makes a good specific op for. And a specific op for, in and of itself, isn't worried about whether or not they win. In fact, they want to. Because they know by virtual, let's say they do win. Let's say they win the scenario. Blue 4 still learns something. Remember, Blue 4 here, in our terms, isn't learning how to do an attack, a deliberate attack. They already know how to do a deliberate attack. They want to know how their deliberate attack is going to go against that type of enemy. And so if they come up and they do their deliberate attack and the op for wins through the AAR process, the after action review, they go, wait a minute. We did that just as we were trained. How did the enemy defeat us? Oh, they defeated us because they did this and this and this. I didn't know they had that capability. Well, we know now. Yet no one died. So a specific op for is allowed to win and is encouraged to win, whatever win means.
Well, you accomplish objectives, right?
Right, absolutely.
So it's a fine line there. So when you once you define the nomenclature there, you know that if I'm facing a specific op for, that they're going to accomplish their objectives with, if, to the best of their ability within the tactics that they're trying, of the unit they're trying to emulate.
You got it.
And to be ready.
You got it.
But they're, but if, and if they do all this the way we have it set up with the scenario base, they're still going to be learning.
See, and this,
it's a win-win.
And I like to end on a positive note. I really do. But this happens so many times. We talk it all the way out. And now I say, now look at everything you see happening in sports, in business, in the military, in MilSim, in gaming, in learning in high school. You look at all the, you know, look at all this and you go, gosh, we're, now that I understand what an Op4 is for, and now that I understand the different models of Op4 and their different focuses, you have to conclude we really don't do this very well.
It's not very imitated and upheld in a lot of different training institutions. And that's not just including the MilSim. Me started on corporate training.
Right.
Don't get me started. They're not doing any of these tactics we talk about on any of these shows, but specifically this one as well.
Yeah. Yeah, this is how humans learn. And we know they enjoy learning this way because what kid doesn't like video games where they fail constantly but learn to overcome? It's fun. It's a challenge. That's what I'm saying. If training, I keep saying that, if training isn't fun, we're doing it wrong.
Well, an interesting concept. Chris had a good time with this show. Opposing forces. Just think about the differences between the two, the characteristics thereof, and you know, with the going, and I'm, of course, my favorite right off the bat. Now I'm thinking where I could place myself right off the bat, dedicated all the way. Training, 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 teaching for the sake of the atmosphere for learning.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. And there's not one that's better than the other, by the way. I don't mean to say that. They're just different focuses, right?
Sure, absolutely. But I could just see where that would be the focus, you know, which would make sense. That's why a lot of them are staff. They're an extension of staff or even game controllers or cadre of that nature, just because, you know, wow, what better environment to become a teacher to, you know, to further your teaching, you know,
sure,
advocacy than to create an entire environment where there's a whole learning exercise going on with all those dynamics. Great time with this. I almost called you coach. You sound like a coach there for a second.
Triple D, this has been a good show. I've enjoyed it.
All right. Well, you know, we're going to wrap that up then. We've covered opposing forces. I think you have a reasonable idea of it. And, of course, they can always consult OD Journal and One Shepherd. I'm sure that One Shepherd goes over this again somewhere besides what we just did here on Battle Rattle Radio.
You think? Yeah.
I think so. And we will be back again here soon. So thanks for tuning in. You can check out this cast and, of course, all of our casts on odjournal.com.
That's right.
Come and give us a look-see or a listen. Thanks again.
You.